When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to BT Sports podcast, Life's a Pitch. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tom Hopkinson of The People and Tony Evans of The Evening Standard. So, Big Sam has had his coronation, his first press conference as England manager. We'll be looking at his plans and his principles. We'll also continue our Premier League countdown. Five more clubs to study: Everton, Hull, Leicester, Liverpool and Manchester City. But first, Sam Allardyce. He spoke of pressure, pragmatism and passion. Have we seen this movie before, Tom?
The three P's. It was a fairly bog standard launch, wasn't it? Even by the standards of an England manager. There wasn't as much tub thumping as I thought there'd be from Sam. Interesting to hear him defending straight away himself against the long ball accusations that people have thrown at him over the years.
The tag I can't shake.
The tag I can't shake. I mean, look, there's a reason he can't shake that tag, particularly when he was at Bolton. He did play that style, and it's a style that he's been successful with. But I'm not too bothered about him getting rid of that. I quite like this pragmatist side to himself that he keeps referring to and that we've heard him talk about over the last 3 or 4 days since his appointment was confirmed, because, you know, it's winning football matches. Yes, we all want to see this great attacking, free-flowing style of football, but I think if Allardyce can come in and make England harder to beat, a little bit more like Portugal, then we stand a lot better chance of progressing at the major tournaments. And I also like to hear him talk about the mental side of it. You know, he's quite keen to stress that he needs to become an arch psychologist. He's always been very forward thinking, Sam Allardyce, in that respect. And quite whether he'll be getting the faith healer in the Eileen Drurys of this world, I don't know. But I think it's something that he will be very very forceful on with the England players.
He spoke about, you know, you can't change the past, but you can learn from it. What are the lessons that he needs to be put into operation, Tony?
Well, I think the lessons he needs to learn is not to put square pegs in round holes, not to play players out of position, not to try and cram all your big names into a team, to try and get balance, which, to be fair, he always did at club level. You know, he'd work on that. I mean, which presents him a number of problems within the squad. But, I mean, I do think, you know, we keep stressing the pragmatic side of things. I think that's the most important thing about about international football. I thought there was a slight disconnect there. You know, we use some of the buzzwords, you know, England's elite players. You know, not England, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, and Dan Ashworth mentioned the DNA, you know, and this idea where, you know, he's going to be based at St. George's Park, and the, you know, this mad idea that people in football have, that every team from like the under fives play the same system as the, you know, the all the way through. And the one thing he needs to do is look at the players he's got and decide what's the best system. And he was talking like that. You sense the DNA thing is the complete antithesis of that.
Yeah. It's quite interesting listening to Sam. I mean, we all have sat in press conferences with him, and I'd be very interested to hear what he says to the newspaper boys once the cameras are off. Yeah. He'll be far more relaxed without the TV cameras, without the radio mics in front of him. And I think we'll get a far better appreciation and sense of what the job means to him, and quite what his vision is.
But his job has got a political dimension, especially
hugely,
now,
hasn't
it? Because the FA basically have bought into him big time.
Yeah, they have. I mean, look, everyone thinks that this is a David Gill appointment driven by Sir Alex Ferguson. Dan Ashworth tried to take Sam Allardyce to West Brom back in 2011 before he took Roy Hodgson there. So Ashworth is a long-term admirer of Allardyce. So I think hopefully there'll be a coming together of the FA's DNA, because it is important that we teach the young children coming through the ranks to be able to play and cope with any which system that the England manager or whatever level you're playing at wants to play. So, but I think if you can marry the two, if we can marry, I don't want to say it's going to explode into great things and we're going to start winning World Cups anytime soon or European Championships, but I do think there's a lot to be learned from taking that DNA, that want to play football, that almost desire to play tiki-taka football, but then also play with a little bit more gumption like Sam Allardyce teams will do.
I suppose, given the media the way it is, one of the things which will be highlighted, certainly online today and in the papers tomorrow, will be Sam's refusal to confirm Wayne Rooney as his captain until they get together in September. That's going to dominate the agenda again, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you know what? If I was him, I'd be thinking about the future without Rooney. You know, he's coming to the end. You know, the way Hodgson changed the team to suit Rooney in the Euros was mad, playing him deep there. And, you know, and everyone said, oh, where? Because he was spraying balls around. Against really bad teams, it might work. Against good teams who can press him, you know, and put him under pressure, it's never going to work. So I think he's got two decisions to make. One, right, is he going to play Rooney? And if he does, he needs to play him up front. And he's got plenty of good goal-scoring strikers there, so he might, you know, want to do that. And secondly, he might look at him and say, at his age, in his condition, you know what? There's better options and build a future around the youth and the pace that's there.
Yeah, and they're starting with a friendly against Croatia, Tom. What will there be an immediate transition, do you think? You know, so, you know, there's an obvious, you know, let's all get aboard the Andy Carroll fun bus. There'll be a lot of that.
Jermaine Defoe as well.
Yeah. Jermaine Defoe. Probably Mark Noble will be getting another tiresome shout or 10. How do you think the nature of that squad will change?
I don't think it'll change too much. I mean, I think Allardyce has been around the block enough to know that evolution works far better than revolution, particularly with a squad that is hugely low on confidence. You know, I mean, there are some incredibly talented young players in that team, your Dele Alli's, your Harry Kane's, even your Kyle Walker's, still so much to learn at international level. And I think for three games at the Euros, those players actually performed all right. They did okay, but I think it was that one game against Iceland that tainted the whole affair for some of us. And, you know, I think he really has got to get that nucleus of the young players and work with them. Now, I'm not averse to him bringing back Jermaine Defoe if he thinks that a team in particular that they're up against has got a defence that doesn't like being turned, doesn't like, you know, that little fella screaming in round the back of them or bringing Andy Carroll into the squad as well. I mean, We sat there when Hodgson told a group of us at a lunch that Andy Carroll wasn't going to be near the squad because, you know, we'd got too many strikers. But then you're looking at the striking options England had got and they were all very much the same, much of a muchness, you know. And you're thinking to yourself, well, actually, you know, that's the whole idea of having a squad, having five strikers. You can maybe bring someone like Carroll in who can, if you've got some big, rough, tough Martin Skrtel-esque defenders, you know, we need to pump the ball into the box, then Carroll will be all elbows, all arms and fighting for it. So I think we'll see far more of that from Sam. I don't think he'll go into every game or every get-together thinking, well, they're the boys who did well for me last time, I have to stick with them. I think he'll be like, no, actually, you know, this is who we're up against and this is who's in form, let's go for that player.
But the bottom line, Tony, is this should be yet another simple qualification process. Get to the tournament. How can Sam develop a tournament-tough team?
Well, I think what he's got a bunch of players there with the experience of going out in a really ugly way, the young players.
And they'll be scarred by that, won't
they? Yeah, they will be scarred. So he's got to build the confidence. And there's a simple way to build confidence. Win games and win games in style. And this should be a really straightforward qualifying group, you know, so they should breeze through. But, you know, what he's got to do is he's got to get them working for each other, get them working as a unit. And if they're doing that, they'll start believing. And, you know, there's so much pace in the squad. You know, and you know, as they always say in American sports, speed kills. You know, if he emphasises that and gets them applying that pace, then, you know, there'll be loads of belief.
Croatia's an interesting start, though, as well, isn't it?
Because they
could easily, they were one of the sort of dark horses going into the Euros, and in the group stages, you're thinking, you know, these have got a potential chance of winning this competition. So I think, you know, I don't think they're going to bounce back from the Iceland game with a game against Croatia that's all of a sudden going to give everyone this you know, buoyancy again, and everyone believing that the future is going to be bright. I mean, it's a big challenge ahead.
Oh, it's going to take a few games for them to get into the minds. But I mean, that's the one thing he's always been quite good at.
But has he got the emotional intelligence to do that? Because, you know, we're in a situation where the England team, their training base, be it the hotel near Watford or St George's Park, tends to resemble Stalag Luft 15. You know, it's a complete siege mentality. They've got to get rid of that.
Well, definitely. You know, you look at the experience of Wales and Chris Coleman. You know, no one would claim him as a great manager. He wouldn't claim that himself. But he knew that, you know, they went to the Euros. They were relaxed. They were in a good mood. The camp was, you know, fairly open. I mean, you know, England camps have been like Wakefield prison, haven't they? You know, it's difficult to get in, even more difficult to get out. It's and I think he needs to change that mood. That siege mentality, that feeling that everyone's, you know, everyone's at them, everyone's, you know, the reality, what you should be trying to do is foster, it's like the whole country is behind you, the whole country is with you, you know, be open and go out. You know, you look at the Dutch in 2010, they were out on the street shaking hands with people in Johannesburg, and I think you've just got to change that mindset where going to play for England is almost like a punishment. Mm. It shouldn't be.
Well, let's start where we will start, the Premier League. You've got, you know, our next five clubs we're looking at here. First is Everton. How big would the Ronald Koeman effect be?
In years gone, I mean, it's a tough question because in the last few years, you'd have said it's a great appointment, really going to galvanise them. You'd be wondering if they're going to be pushing top six and challenging for those Europa League spots. But unfortunately, it's been overshadowed. I say unfortunately. Fortunately for Koeman, it's been overshadowed by other managerial appointments, the Guardiolas, the Mourinhos. But that said, I think for Everton fans that might be a good thing, because I think it enables him to work a little bit more under the radar than perhaps he would have been. You know, I mean, how often do we see Premier League managers transferring from one club to another? You know, so in normal circumstances, it would have been a huge story. So it perhaps takes the pressure off him a bit. I think he's got a lot of business to do in the next few weeks. I still expect to see John Stones sold to Manchester City. And this Romelu Lukaku story, even though you read the odd thing and hear the odd thing that perhaps Koeman has talked him into staying, it won't go away, this whole Chelsea link, the fact he thinks he's got unfinished business at Chelsea. And I know when teams are on pre-season tours, as journalists, you pick up a little bit more than you perhaps would from within the club, because you're in and around them all day. And it seems to me that Chelsea aren't doing anything to dampen the idea that they could go again. I know they've had a big bid turned down for Morata, so whether they go for Lukaku as well for big money remains to be seen. But I think it'll be a good season for Ronald Koeman. I think he's a wonderful manager. I wish John Stones had given them another season, actually, to learn off Koeman as a defender for a year, because I think from an England fan perspective that, and from for Everton fans, that could have been huge.
Mm. Koeman's talking about the need to sort out his goalkeeping situation. Mm. And there's also a lot of talk about Witzel coming in for about £25 million. Mm. Let's take that one at a time, the goalkeeping situation. Jack Butland, what about Kasper Schmeichel?
Well, Kasper Schmeichel would be a brilliant buy, wouldn't he? You know, he's grown as a keeper. He's really confident. He dominates his area. He does what a lot of keepers don't do these days. He communicates. He talks to his back four, and he's excellent. I mean, he'd be a perfect buy for them. And you know what's going on at Leicester. He can't be enjoying that. So
I think there's a problem though, isn't there, with Schmeichel? I think Steve Walsh's appointment is, I think there's an agreement as part of that they won't go back and raid Leicester for any of their players. So that could dampen down any hopes that Everton did have of signing Schmeichel.
Okay, and what about Butland? He's really impressed me, but he probably didn't get his opportunity, isn't he?
Yeah, and do you know what? I'd actually quite like to see Jack Butland get an opportunity with England now as well, like a proper opportunity, because I think he's grown immensely. I think of the loan spell he had at Derby a few years ago, and I think if you spoke to a lot of Derby fans, they just would not believe that this lad was now, you know, the potentially the next England goalkeeper. But he's really grown in the last couple of years since he's gone back to Stoke and working with Mark Hughes and his backroom team. He's been immense. So I think that would make very much sense if I was an Everton man.
Yeah, well, there's also the possibility of Begovic, you know, if they do the Lukaku deal, going the other way.
Yeah. What about, you know, looking at, I was speaking to some Dutch friends over the weekend, And there's consistent rumours that Robin van Persie wants to come back because of the situation in Turkey.
Yeah, definitely.
And it would make sense, and there's a lot of talk about him going to Everton. Do you see that's feasible?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're struggling to sign people at the moment. And one of the reasons is, for the first time in 15 years, they've got some money. And all the agents, their eyes are, like, lighting up. You know, it's, Pelle, he wants a 55 grand a week off the net. So, you know, the deal in different markets. So, although it costs a lot in wages, Van Persie, you know, it might well work for them. And they're going to need to bring a few people in. They're certainly, you know, and they need to bolster themselves up front if Lukaku goes. Yeah. And it's been a little bit difficult for them. So it would make sense.
You'd still fancy Van Persie, even if he chipped in with 7 or 8 goals, goals, which he's quite capable of doing. And what a difference that would make. I think just as interestingly at Everton will be what happens with the players who are already there. You've got Gareth Barry, who had one of his best seasons for a long, long time for a couple of years, but you know, despite his age, his stats were incredible last season. And I think that'll be interesting to see what Koeman does, because I think that'll be a real mark of, you know, I'm coming in and I'm making this squad my own, which goes back to the point you were making about Witsel. You would imagine that he is the man that they see to bring in for the long term.
Sure. What about Ross Barkley? Because he went to the Euros and didn't get a kick, quite literally. Is he in? He's got an absolutely crucial season ahead of him, hasn't he?
Well, I mean, he's come backwards, hasn't he? You know, it's the Martinez years weren't good for him. You know, he's got all the physical attributes, but he makes bad decisions on the pitch all the time. And Martinez was never quite sure where to play him. You know, it's and I think that again, it'll be crucial for him to see what Koeman's idea to play him. I suspect he'll play him behind the forwards and, you know, driving through. But, you know, unless he starts learning, you know, there's going to be a player who will never fulfil his potential.
And Van Persie could be very interesting, actually, in terms of working with Barkley and his development, because if all of a sudden he's working day in, without, with someone with the intelligent movement that Van Persie's got, for Barkley to, you know, be thinking, oh, I need to start playing the ball here, you know, that could be immense for Everton.
If we're talking about Premier League clubs with problems, Hull City's probably top of the list. No manager, 13 players, an owner who wants out. Well, they're basically relegation favourites, pretty much nailed on already, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they don't want to sign players on permanent deals. Well, the ownership's a problem. So it looks like a car crash, you know. And Steve Bruce just must have thought to himself, well, I'm out of here, because it'll do him no good if it goes into meltdown. It's a shame, you know. They come back up. You know, it's the owner has been great for the club in many ways. You know, taking them, you know, from the lower reaches, you know, the game all the way up to the Premier League, but to fall apart like this at this stage, it's just, you know, it's beyond comprehension.
I think worrying for Hull fans, it reminds you a lot of the Aston Villa situation, doesn't it? You know, with Randy Lerner refusing to invest to any degree, and infighting behind the scenes and questionable decisions from people who perhaps haven't got as much experience in football as they should have. And I think Steve Bruce, easily the most successful manager Hull have ever had, for him to walk away, and in this day and age as well, I know Bruce, he won't be short of a bob or two, but for a manager to walk away from a lucrative contract and not even ask for any compensation or ask for the final days of his contract to be paid up, and just say, do you know what, we've been in this position too many, I've fought too many battles to keep clubs in the Premier League or to get them promoted back to the Premier League, I just don't need this anymore. I mean, that sends out an awful message to whoever. I mean, of course, there'll be people who want the job. We've seen the names bandied around. Sherwood, I think McLaren's been ruled out, but he wanted it. Keane as well, discussed, you know. But
so Keane with that owner?
Yeah.
Combustible is the word you're thinking
of. The only thing that Hull have got in the favour, because in this meltdown situation, different from Villa, is at the end of the season, they've got 100 million in television money. Yeah. Mm. So whoever's coming in will, you know, have the opportunity for them to bounce back, you know. I mean, they'll probably go down. They look like a team that's going to go down. They haven't got enough. And, you know, it's... But they will have the opportunity with that money and the parachute money to come back up.
What is telling, Tom, is that the champions, Leicester City, look like roadkill at the moment. They're being picked clean bit by bit. You know, they've lost Steve Walsh, who's gone to Everton as director of football. They've lost Kante. Mahrez to Arsenal won't go away. What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, the other one that hasn't gone away as well, you thought it would, was Jamie Vardy to Arsenal. Mm. You know, you assumed when he signed that new deal and pledged his future to Leicester City that was all over. But if you speak to one or two people in and around the game, they're adamant that Arsenal could still come back for him right at the end of the window. And you know, I mean, Vardy could even be waiting just to see, you know, what if Leicester lose their first couple of games and the window's still open till the end of August, and you think, well, actually, you know, that Arsenal, they've come back with a 30 or 40 million pound offer.
Well, that was the conspiracy theory, that the new deal was just to put the...
Just to put the actual price up. I mean, the Kanté deal, it was disappointing, wasn't it? Because you really wanted to see everyone stay together and see how they got on against
the teams in the Champions League. It would have been brilliant to see them in the Champions League.
And everyone would have supported them. Everyone would have got right. But, I mean, even I'm a Derby fan. Even Derby and Forest fans would have been quite happy to see that team going. I think. But you know, it would have been... It's the whole continuation of the fairy tale. I think that's what we were hoping for. But, of course, Kanté going to Chelsea, it just puts that little bit of... like a postscript on the end of it, doesn't it? But... if you're a footballer, you can understand exactly why he's going to do it, because realistically, is he going to have more success at Chelsea for the next 5 years of his career than he would have had at Leicester? But the one caveat for Leicester fans is that the lad they've brought in, is it Mendy? Mm. The lad they've brought in as cover, they actually tried to sign him last summer before they got Kanté. They failed to get Mendy, so went for Kanté. He had an incredible season. So the hope is that this lad will be even better.
Leicester have, you know, a great reputation for very good recruitment. Mm. Now, that's something that you can't accuse Liverpool of having. They're throwing the kitchen sink at it. You know, Klopp's got his long-term contract. They're the biggest spenders so far. Club you know well, Tony. How do you think they're doing?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that they've spent a lot of money, but it's been, you know, number one target, we can't get him. Number two target, no, we can't get him. Number three target, I wish we could get him. Number four target, so there's a bit of that going on.
Big money as well.
And there's a little bit, you're hearing some of the things that you heard in the transfer committee / Brendan Rodgers age. You know, what we like about him is he can play everywhere. And you're like, oh no, you know, it's one of them. They've strengthened defensively. They've got a good goalkeeper in. You know, Mignolet was you know, a problem for the entire time he was at the club. So they brought a goalkeeper in. They've strengthened the...
Karius from Schalke, isn't it?
Yeah. They've strengthened the back four. So, you know, you'd think they'll be a bit stronger there. Desperately needs a left back. The midfield still looks a little bit thin to me. There's a lot of lightweight forwards, attacking type midfielders who are not quite goal scorers, but it's hard to see the balance being right. There's like a group of Adam Lallana's there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A minibus full of them, and you know, it still looks a bit incoherent to me.
What about Wijnaldum? You know, £25 million from Newcastle, being talked up hugely by Jurgen Klopp, says he's a complete player. He can play in a 4-2-3-1 either as a shield or in the three behind the striker. He can also play either side on a 4-3-3.
I hope he can play in any system for £25 million. I mean, I know that's probably chicken feed at this stage of the Premier League. But yeah, look, he's a very good player, hugely talented. And I think when he arrived in England, I think everyone thought, you know, what a signing he was for Newcastle. People talk about the goals that he scored last year. It was 11-odd goals he got against being against weaker teams and got a couple in the rout against Norwich, I think. And I think the jury's just out on him. I think he's got the potential to be a very good player, very good signing for Liverpool. But I think...
Lots of doubts about his application.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think of Matip as well, you know, 24 years old. Has he really done it? You know, he's played in the Bundesliga, but... Mm. It's not the same pressure, consistent pressure that you're under as a defender as in the Premier League.
So and the pace is different.
Yeah, so is he robust enough to deal with that? And you look at the other side of some of these signings, the age profile of some of them, you know, you're talking 30-year-old players who haven't been at big clubs, you know, and really, is that what Liverpool need?
Well, you know, Klopp has said, he said, you know, if people knew what was going on at this club, if players knew, they'd be beating a pat to our door. Well, they're not.
And you should take what to tell him then.
Yeah, you know, it's the fact is, there is nothing that there that's attractive because they won't pay top wages that will get the sort of players that will get you back in the Champions League.
And they're going to ship a load of players out, aren't they? You know, it's already started. You know, Brad Smith, who's a good young fullback, £6 million to Bournemouth, they're talking about. It looks like Joe Allen's going to Stoke for £13 million. Yeah. Jordan Ibe has already gone for £15 million, so they're getting some money in.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get Henderson out of there, I'm sure they will.
You think they would get rid of their captain?
Yeah, the owners have never liked them. The owners have wanted them out from the beginning. So, you know, there's quite a few of them who are vulnerable at the moment.
Milner's another one who could go out.
Again, he's on, you know, he's the highest paid player at the club. Mm. And I mean, that for me, you know, everyone says he's gone on free. To me, it's an issue if James Milner's the highest paid player at your club, no matter how he come. You know, and I like James Milner.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't see him suiting Klopp's style, really. The jury's out and they've got a tough start to the season. I mean, it could be, you know, if you're a believer in Klopp, you know, and most people are, you know, everyone seems to think it's great. They could get to the end of October and the nightmare scenario is they're in 10th place, Everton are doing well, you know, and spent more money in the transfer window, and then the moods will turn.
Mm. It's going to have to turn probably at Manchester City as well. Pep Guardiola, you know, as we know, ad infinitum is going in. They've gone all the way to China for a match,
good
for
decision,
a derby,
by the look of it, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Which yeah. which has been called off today. What would success for Guardiola look like this season?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think top two would be deemed successful enough. I think if you ask Pep Guardiola himself, he would tell you that the success, you know, winning is the be all and end all. But I think given the fact that this squad does need work, I don't think there's any questions about that or doubts about that. But you wouldn't ever write him off, would you? I mean, it would be interesting to see what Nolito's like as a player. I mean, this is a man who didn't last too long at Barcelona, had a season there, I think, and then went off to Celta Vigo. And again, you know, 29 years old, is he really the type of player who at 29 is all of a sudden going to start putting in performances that, you know, there's a reason we hadn't heard of him in the same bracket that we've heard of a lot of the other top quality players in Spain. I think Gundogan is an interesting signing. Obviously,
fitness issue
to start with, but you know, he's here for 3 or 4 years, isn't he? So he would be back, I think, September, October time. So, I think there's still at least 2, possibly 3 huge signings to come for Manchester City. Yeah. They're in for Toni Kroos from Real Madrid. They really like him. Inquiries have been made. I think if they got him, that would be an incredible signing. Mm-hmm. I think they'll do business for a forward as well. So I think it's quite difficult to measure what will be success for City at the moment. A good run in the Champions League again. I think that's what they're really looking for from Guardiola. Definitely. But again, he's been very much, he's asked for time, hasn't he? Every time he's spoken for his first few press conferences, he has made it clear, I need a bit of time. And I think, again, let's give him a season. I know it's tough at that level, but...
But all managers do that. All new managers do that,
don't
they?
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, Manchester City, you know, because you think the money they've spent in the past, which not so much recently, but, you know, you think of them as being big spenders and all that, and you think, oh, you know, look at the squad they've got. You know, it's a squad that really needs to be overhauled seriously. Mm. And it's been a bit underwhelming this summer so far. You know, he probably needs a centre-half, another centre-half. He needs a full-back, you know, maybe two. He needs... probably a goalkeeper, the way Joe Hurts doing, he doesn't fancy him anyway. And in the centre of midfield, that's the crucial area where Yaya Touré was an absolute disgrace last year. You know, up front, they've got a multitude of riches, but you just worry when you get past the front four.
What about Leroy Sane? Good young player, very good young player.
Yeah, exciting prospect, actually, yeah. It was good to see him at the Euros when he came on. He always looked like he brought something a little bit different. And again, you know, to go back to what Tony was saying about the Americans saying speed kills, and you know, Sane's got that in abundance. Mm. So, I think he will be, if they can, you know, get him firing and get it all done, that would be a great signing.
Mm. And as a final, you know, look at this section of our countdown, it is becoming very clear that this season will be defined by managers and a lot of lost opportunity, because there are six or seven clubs who are going to go into this season thinking we can be champions. Mm. Someone's going to miss out. Who?
Well, I think it's going to be tough for Liverpool. I think it's going to be Chelsea. The jury's out on Chelsea. Anything could happen there. I think City will be in the top four. I can see United getting in the top four. But I think realistically, at this stage, there's only two clubs I think can win the title, and they're both in North London. That may all change over the next few weeks. But it's everything's been fairly quiet at Tottenham. But I like the way they've gone about the business. And if Arsenal, sort of raids Leicester, Leicester will retain the title at the Emirates.
Final question then. What about City? Will they regain the title this season?
Oh, come on. What a difficult question. No, I don't think they will. I think second or third for City this year.
I think they're definitely at least a year away.
I'd agree with that. The others are ahead of the curve. City champions in 2018 rather than 2017. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.